Hello and welcome to another episode of Fungela. My guest today is Aaron Weber. Let me tell you, Aaron is having a moment, you guys. He is hilarious. He is a co-host of the Nateland podcast. He has a new special out on YouTube called Signature Dish. He just had his first late night television appearance on The Tonight Show. He has a brand new baby daughter. Like, he's having a moment, you guys. He is all the rage. And he came and sat down with us to tell us about all the things that he's grateful for. One of my favorite things that he talked about being grateful for is that he's matured as a sports fan. And I think that's hilarious. But he has good reasons. He has some good reasons maturing as a sports fan. If you want to see him on tour, you can go to his website, aaronwebercomedy.com. You can also check him out on the podcast, Nateland Podcast. And yeah, we get into it on this episode. Very fun. What else, Danielle? Is it me now? Did I talk about me?
You. Talk about you for a little bit.
Okay, so now I talk about me for a little bit. Okay. My family reunion tour starts this weekend. Oh my gosh. Okay. So get your tickets, whatever city you're in, go to my website, angela.com. We announced cities in like batches. Okay. So the first batch starts this weekend in Denver. And then we have a whole second batch. Then we're doing summer shows. Then we have fall shows. We have a bunch of shows happening right now. So go to my website, angela.com, see when I'm coming to a city near you, and get your tickets ASAPable. Okay. Also, if you like this podcast and you're enjoying it, go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and tell everybody why you love it so the word will get out and other people can come and love it too. That would be great. Also, if you want to call me and tell me what you're grateful for, I might pick your voicemail to play on a future episode. And here's the phone number to call.
747-300-5380.
Give us a call. Tell us what you're grateful for and like, subscribe, do all the things that help get the word out of this podcast, that help remind you that, hey, another episode is out because we're weekly now. We started off bi-weekly. Now we're every single Tuesday. You can come and get your fresh dose of the Fungela podcast. So enjoy this episode with Aaron Weber. Bro, first of all, thanks for coming over here.
Of course.
In this gloomy day.
Yeah.
Gloomy.
Oh, is it gloomy there too?
It's gloomy, but it's warm though.
Like, oh, no, we're gloomy and cold over here.
Yeah. I'm still getting used to the gloomy and warm. Are you from Nashville?
Alabama originally.
Okay. So you're still used to that.
Yeah.
That kind of weather.
Oh, yeah. It's way better up here. I'll take the cold days over those hot, swampy days any day of the year.
Well, it's so confusing to me because it's gloomy outside and then I'll walk out to go take my dog potty in the morning and it's like 6:30 in the morning. I'm like, come on, let's go potty. And then I go out there thinking I'm going to be freezing. And I'm like, I'm sweating.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Uh-huh.
What is this about? Yes, sir. Thank you. My co-producer there.
Is that Manny?
Yeah. First of all, what a time to be Aaron Weber. What a time.
I'm having a moment.
You listen.
No, it's been a fun few weeks for sure.
What a time.
Yeah.
Look, even before that few weeks, you just had a baby.
Oh, I forgot about family. Yeah.
Let's talk about the past even a few years. You got married.
Right.
To an amazing woman. Shout out, Lizzie. Mm-hmm. You had a baby. You have a special out right now. You just did your first late night television appearance.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. You just did it the other day. Tell me, what were you feeling? What were all the things?
It was very exciting. They prepare you so well that I wasn't as nervous as I thought I would be.
Yeah.
I showed up very early, did sound check. I did my full set for the camera crew.
Okay.
Beforehand.
Uh-huh.
So I thought.
Did they give you good laughs, for rehearsal laughs?
They gave me some polite laughs.
Okay.
But I remember thinking, I've already had my worst set on this stage today. So the set for the crowd can't be any worse than this.
Uh-huh.
I have not watched it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw your post. Stop. Tell me about that, too.
Well, that's another part of it. But even now that it's on YouTube, I put it on. I saw how I walked out of the curtain, and I just turned it off.
What? You irked yourself?
I can't watch this. Yeah. I just walked out with such an energy that's like, it just bothered me.
What so
I
energy? Turned, what?
I walked out a little too hot, I think. I was a little too hot. So they tell you there's a producer right behind the curtain, and he goes, all right. And, you know, you hear Jimmy Fallon right there saying my intro.
Yeah.
And then the Roots start playing. Uh-huh. And you're supposed to walk out. They tell you, acknowledge Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
And then acknowledge the Roots. And then, so I walked out so fast.
Oh my God, I cannot wait
like,
to see
this.
With
just like an energy that is not conducive to my stand up at all. Oh. So I had to like wind down. So just seeing all that on film, I was
you
like.
You skipped, you're like.
Yeah, kind of. So I thought I'll just keep it as a memory of it going well.
Yeah.
I don't need to watch and find out it didn't go as well as I thought.
Well, I saw the little clip the Tonight Show posted, which I thought was great. I haven't gone through and watched your whole thing yet. But tell me about you went to go watch it in a bar.
Yeah. So that night. That night I went with Michael Cox, who's the booker of the Tonight Show, my manager, and my wife, Lucy, and we thought, let's go to this bar. It'll be fun. We'll put it on. So right when it was about my turn on the show, they actually put it on all the TVs in the bar. So it's all these strangers. They have no clue what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And they put the Tonight Show on, and then as soon as Jimmy Fallon calls my name, emergency alert. On all the TVs, a message comes up and says, you know, required weekly testing.
And it wasn't even an emergency.
No.
It was a maintenance.
It was a routine test for it. So the timing of it was so funny. We found one TV kind of in another room that I guess wasn't connected to the others, but no audio. So I went and actually I watched it and kind of like dubbed over it in my own voice.
Yeah, it was
just a fun thing to have happen.
Yeah.
You know?
A New York moment.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
That is so cool.
And
though.
Then nobody in the bar cares that it's me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You think they'd be like, that's the guy from the. Nobody cares.
No. Yeah. They're like, no, we get all the late night guests in here all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. Whatever.
Well, Lucy was freaking out because Idina Menzel was in the dressing room right next to us.
Oh,
and she's a big.
Was?
Yeah. And she has a Rent tattoo, my wife.
No.
I mean, this
way.
Is how into her she is. But we didn't want to be the one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, nobody in there seemed to care about celebrity at all. Uh-huh. So I didn't want to, you know.
Yeah, yeah. We're from Nashville. Hi.
Yeah. Hi, how are you? I've seen you on TV before. Adrian Brody walked by, too. I didn't want to be like, hey, I've seen you.
Yeah.
So I just acted like nothing impressed me the whole time while I'm just freaking out, you know.
Although, there is something charming about it, I will say. Like, it's borderline. It can be like super annoying, like I'm just here to do my thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then there is kind of that, like, I've seen you on TV, and I almost feel like there's a little bit of charm to it where I'm like, aw.
Who have you had that moment with?
Like me doing it to someone or somebody?
Yeah, you doing it to somebody else.
Let's see. Well, I know I had my whole thing with James Gandolfini. I did a movie with him, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
And I got real starstruck and I couldn't even speak. I wasn't like jokey in between takes. I was just like super like quiet. And then he called me on it and was like, you're a quiet one. And I'm like, I'm actually not. Like, I don't know why I'm being this way.
Yeah,
I don't get
you.
It. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then we just like laughed about it. And then he kept calling me mama for the rest of the shoot. He'd be like, hey, mama. And it was like giving me hugs and like just really like was super warm and loving and fun. And I, of course, loosened up after that. But
yeah,
I'm trying to think if there's ever been a moment where I'm like, oh my God, hi. I'm sure there
remember
had
when
been.
You met Rosie O'Donnell? Were you?
Oh, I didn't do her to her face. But afterwards, I was like, I was very just like. And here's the thing. I like Rosie O'Donnell, but I don't have a Rosie O'Donnell tattoo on my arm.
Right.
But you would have thought in that moment I had a Rosie O'Donnell tattoo on my arm because I was just like locked into every word she was saying and like laughing way too hard.
Yeah, too much.
At her joke. It wasn't even a joke. It was just like a word that she said with a funny inflection. And I'm like, oh, oh my God, Rosie. see him, Todd. Oh my God. Like, it was the, and I'm just like sucked in, like locked right in. And I'm like, I don't know what cologne you're wearing, but I love it. It was just like all the things.
I would like to see a Rosie O'Donnell tattoo, though, just to see what that
I'm sure somebody has
what
it.
That would be.
I'm sure somebody has it as her character from League of Their Own. I'm guaranteeing somebody has that tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Or remember, for, wasn't it her talk show where she had the sort of cartoon drawing, the animated drawing of
I
her?
I don't recall that.
The View?
Oh.
I need to, no, she had her own talk show.
She had
a long
her own
time
talk
ago.
Show.
Oh, okay.
I need to turn my microphone
what
on.
Was
Hold
it like? Was it like a Ricky Lake type show?
Yes, it was. Oh, I think it was really similar to the Ricky Lake show. Yeah. But I'm fairly certain she had like a.
It was a late night one, right?
I feel like it was. Was it? Now, hold on. Now I want to Google.
Or was it daytime? Is that too loud for you?
No, I think it sounds great.
Okay. I think it was daytime. But I'm pretty sure she had like a little cartoon version of herself. Or I'm fully making this up and I don't know what
fully
I'm talking
you had a dream.
About.
I forget like sometimes that comedians are, a lot of them are very famous to me, but there's like a whole other level of fame that I just don't interact with much. Like I did a show at Zany's in Nashville years ago that Brad Paisley hosted.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a Brad Paisley hosting a night of comedy, and something about like he's a different level of fame than like Dusty Slay and Greg Warren, who are also on the show with me. So Brad Paisley shows up, and I remember being like, oh my God, that's Brad Paisley. And people
that's a real celebrity.
There were people outside freaking out. I've never seen people waiting outside before a show to see a comic before. So it was just like a different level. And then I bombed kind of talking to him. We're standing in a line. No. It's Greg Warren, Dusty Slay, and me. And he, and kind of weirdly, now that I think about it, he goes, tell me something interesting about yourself to all three of us. So I remember, I'm last.
Interviewed.
So I'm like thinking, like, what can I say? He goes to Dusty, and Dusty says, well, I do comedy, but I like to smoke a cigar every now and then and hang out. And he goes, all right, cool. Then he turns to me, and I go, man, same. And Brad Paisley goes, all right, cool.
Let's hang out.
I don't even like cigars that much. I couldn't think of anything.
No. Oh, no. Uh-huh.
That'll happen.
Yeah, you did bomb that one.
I did. For
That's
sure.
All right.
Think about that quite a bit.
This was at Zany, at the lab? No, this is before the lab.
This was a few years ago, in the main room at Zany. So.
You filmed your special at the lab?
At the lab, yeah, the new room.
You had a fantastic audience. First of all, I'm not finished all the way with your special, being 100% honest. I'm about like three quarters of the way through.
That's okay.
So good.
Thank you.
So funny. So just, I love just your natural style of just like storytelling and like you're just having a conversation with everybody. It's really, really fun. But also the way you use words, like you said something that I was dying. You ever walk around a Walgreens indefinitely? That is so funny to
thank
me.
You.
Like,
thank you.
Just the words, walk around a Walgreens indefinitely, got me.
I appreciate it.
But I was listening and your crowd was really good.
They were hot.
They were a fantastic crowd. I feel like every time I've performed at the lab, it's like boo-boo energy.
It's good and, oh, really? Not
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I've only performed at the lab three times, and then I've gone to other people's show. But every time I've gone, I'm like, the energy here is a little funky wonky.
Look, I've had plenty of bad sets there too, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think they did a good job of letting them know this is something special.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, have a lot of energy.
Bring your A game.
And I feel like if you convince people to fake it for a while, then eventually it becomes real.
They didn't sound like they were faking it. They sound like they were fully into you.
I appreciate it. We had some good comics opening up. Brian Bates was on it and a few other guys that got them in the right spot. But yeah, they were really good. I was happy with it.
How long have you been doing stand-up?
9 years.
9 years.
Yeah.
9 years. So the question that I have is, did you ever think you'd have a special? But I want to say, of course you did. Like, we all like dream for things like this. But did you ever think you'd have a special?
Like, way in the background did I think about stuff like this. Like I wouldn't have been like, hey, I'm going to do The Tonight Show 1 year and Nate Bargatze is going to produce my special. Yeah. You don't think about those things.
Yeah.
Like, I remember thinking, like, I just want to, like, feature for a weekend at a club. Like, those were the goals I was vocal about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you would have pressed me, I would have said, you know, deep down, I want to do those things someday. Yeah. And I think I maybe can get there.
If you'd get a little vulnerable and be like,
yeah,
I would like one of those.
Yeah, I have dreams and stuff, you know. But I think you're taught to kind of, maybe it's a good instinct, but to kind of make fun of sincerity and that kind of stuff. As a young comic doing these open mics and dive bars and everybody's miserable. Yeah. And there's humor in that. Yeah. And you can get good at comedy through that. But no, I wasn't.
Look at this guy. He's emotionally healthy. Yeah,
is there anything worse than a mentally healthy man doing comedy? Yeah.
How did it come about you doing a special? Was Nate like, you're ready? Like, did he champion this? Like, how did this happen?
We had talked about it kind of for a while. I think he was very smart. I wanted to do an hour because I've been doing an hour on the road. And he was like, you don't need to do an hour. He's like, you don't need that. Mm-hmm. Your first thing, like, do a half hour.
Yeah.
That way it'll be easier when you get back out on the road. And also, like, hopefully you leave them going, that flew by.
Yeah.
Or I wanted more.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to be like, the worst for me would if I did an hour and they're like, man, this should have been a 15-minute set or something, you know? So,
what was this, a two-hour special?
I know, that felt like all night I was there. So we had just talked back and forth, and he started the production company. They started doing some specials. So I'm on the podcast with him. It was just, and he's been very generous to me and, really great. So I'm happy it worked out. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy seeing executive producer Nate Bargatze on an Aaron Weber special. So
look at that.
It's very cool.
Very cool. Congrats, man.
Thank you.
Like I said, what a time to be Aaron Weber. I'm super, super happy for you.
I appreciate it.
Really.
Thank you so much.
And I just started to get to know you when I moved here to Nashville, you know.
We met years ago, very briefly, at the Wiltern in Los Angeles.
Really?
I mean, literally, like, literally half a second passing each other.
Who did you come with?
John Chris. Show.
Okay.
And there was like an after party, but I still had a full time
job. Wait, it was his show or my show?
It was his show.
Oh, okay.
You came by just say hi to him.
Okay.
And I passed you for a second. And I think you were very nice. You said good set or something. I didn't have that great of a set, but you were being very nice. And then I had a full time job at that point. So I was taking a red eye back to Nashville to go to work the next morning.
No way.
So I stayed at the after party for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Then I had to get out of there.
Was that your first big LA show?
That was my first time in LA.
No way.
Yeah. It was at the Wiltern. So I thought, I don't need to come back for a few years.
Look at that.
It was fun. I remember I stepped off the tour bus, and within a minute, this crazy dude came up, started screaming in my face. I thought, I'm here.
I'm in Hollywood.
I'm in Los Angeles. Yeah.
You guys drove the bus from Nashville all the way there?
I think it was part of a long run where maybe we were in different Bakersfield or like other cities ended up there. But I remember waking up on the bus.
Yeah, yeah.
And thinking, man, I am in LA, LA. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, somebody just tried to assault me. Yeah. I'm in LA.
Yeah, here we go.
I made it.
City of Angels. Yeah, it was really fun.
That is like a peak LA experience. Like, I was gone for almost all of December. And when I landed at the airport, immediately a lady was yelling in the Uber area. And I was like, I'm home.
There you go. I love it.
I'm back, baby.
Yeah.
Listen, here on Fungela, we talk about gratitude, things that we're grateful for, but we started off with a mattitude.
I love it.
Okay? Yeah. Like, what is the thing that's ticking you off these days? Remember ticking you off? I haven't said that in a long time.
Ticking you off.
Have you ever said that?
Of course.
Yeah,
my dad says that. I feel like that's also like a... Is that Southern or is that just...
He's Southern. He never heard... Did you say you never heard of it?
I would say tick you off, but okay. I think it was because I wasn't allowed to say piss.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say tick.
Well, sure. I would say... I always say piss you off all the time, but it's funny. When I was actually on your guys' podcast, people would leave comments about me cussing.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, I didn't cuss on their show. What are they talking about?
What did you say?
And it was, I think I said piss.
Oh, man.
And I think I said piss.
We didn't bleep you for that?
No.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I can't believe we let that slide.
And I think I said, oh, hell no.
Yeah. Yeah. And then remember the hell comments. Yeah.
I did see somebody do a, I can't believe they let her cuss on the show. And they gave the time code. And it was, I said, oh, hell no.
You should be ashamed.
You know what? Repent. Yeah.
They're like, into hell you go.
Yeah, that's exactly. So it's funny that right now, I don't know why I registered that you sitting right here, uh-huh. and I was like, "Don't say piss, ticking you off,
grinding your gears."
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. What's grinding your gears?
Yeah.
Well, I have one that is going to seem very basic, but my complaint is more about how I'm allowed to handle it.
Uh-huh.
The traffic in the city of Nashville is so bad, uh-huh. and it's talked about a lot because the city's growing and everybody goes, the traffic's awful. But I found that things that annoy me, if I can vent about it to somebody, I can kind of handle it okay.
Okay.
A lot of times I just need to, like, just complain.
Get it out.
And then by the end of it, I'm joking about it. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to hear about traffic because we all deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And also I'm part of the problem because I'm driving in it, right?
Yeah.
So I have, you know, text thread with comics and I'll be driving home from Zany's and it'll take me an hour and a half to get home when it should take 20 minutes. And I'll text them and I'll go, traffic on I-40 is bad and nobody cares. And I just need, and then I get, my wife could not care less. She's like, I've been home with the baby.
Yeah.
I would love to have been stuck in traffic, you know, alone, listening to music and doing whatever. So that's the frustrating part for me.
Is that you don't have a support team.
I guess, that's a very funny way to put it. But it's just something I deal with every day. That I get no sympathy for,
uh-huh.
and nobody cares that I go through it. So you just feel so helpless.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you would think.
It's legitimately frustrating.
You would think mm-hmm. because they're also going through it that why aren't you here with me on this level? You know what I mean? Like, why aren't you, like, you also sit in the traffic.
I know.
Why are we not feeling bad for each
other? I'd love to hear y'all complain about it too. Like, just please, rope me in. But nobody seems to want to except me. And then I'm like, well, is this a me thing? Why? Because I don't think I have an anger problem. I really don't. I don't think I have any temper issues at all, but something about being on the interstate and it gets down to one lane and then I get up there and there's nothing happening. Like, that makes me so mad that I'll scream at the windshield.
Because I think traffic is like your kryptonite or whatever it is, like the thing that can, like, take you down. Because my husband, when he's in traffic, he becomes a different human being.
I love it. Does he yell at other cars and stuff?
He doesn't necessarily yell. He's Puerto Rican, so he's already volume up here, okay. just passionate already okay. out the gate. He gets very sarcastic and petty.
I love that.
And it's, to me, it's so annoying and it irks me. But if, like, he's trying to get in and people don't let him in, oh, really? Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Wow, look how fast you got up there. Wow, we're in the same section. Wow. Like, he gives all of those. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, maybe he just didn't see you.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what? Like, he becomes a whole different
person. Never assume the best intentions on the road. Always assume the worst.
I'm with Manny on this one. That's what I do too. Like, especially if they're behind you. I had a guy recently behind me, like, flash his lights because he thought I was going slower, and then he got in front of me, but was only able to get in front of me. And I was like, "Oh, do you feel better? You feel better now that you're in front of me?"
Yeah. Oh, look at you, big man, big F-150. Oh, yeah, look at you. No, don't wave. I don't need a wave. I'm happy to let anybody in here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do that all the time. You know what I think? A part of it is that driving on the road, you are risking your life.
Uh-huh.
You are on edge.
Yeah.
Like, it's annoying that the guy kind of went over to your lane, mm-hmm. but also if he could hit you and run you off the road.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that's what I deal with on a daily basis. My wife hates it. We can't really drive in the car together. She'll get too mad at me. And then I'll put my foot on the brakes for a second and she acts like... you know what doesn't help when I'm annoyed in traffic is my wife going, that has never helped the situation at all. I want to go, just close your eyes.
Yeah.
I got it. You know, I wish we had one of those vans. My cousin used to have a van where the middle seats would spin around and they could face backwards.
Oh, yeah.
Like an Astro van.
Astro minivan.
Yes. And I go, I wish we had one of those so you could just not look at the road. and just let me deal with it. Let me get mad at people. I yell. Well, I don't honk the horn. I'm a coward, too. I don't actually want confrontation with these people. Yeah. I'll never honk the horn, but I say horrific things about them just to myself. You know? And then by the time I get home, I sit in my driveway for 10 minutes. And
decompress.
I go, I'm ready to be with my family now. And then I walk in and I'm perfectly fine. But it would sure help if Brian Bates or Dusty Slayer, one of my friends, would just let me complain about it every now and then.
Yeah, they just ignore it. They don't even give it a thumbs up or no, they have no acknowledgement.
Brian will straight up go, I don't care. Stop texting me.
Oh, nice. Nice B. Nice B.
Yeah.
Or Dusty doesn't hit you with the same like he did for his.
Yeah. Same. Yeah, same.
Yeah. I did this the other day when I was driving. I've been driving since I was a teenager.
That's usually when you start.
That's a long time. However, I will say this. I took my driving test 3 times. And the third time when I finally passed, this is how the driving instructor, or not instructor, but the guy taking the test, this is how he got in the car. So I'm, 10-2 or whatever it is. And I'm ready. He does the whole walk around the car, checks, put your blinker on, make sure they work and stuff. He gets in the car. Reclines his seat all the way back to lay down position, throws his clipboard in front of him, and he goes, "All right, go."
Whoa. Does he know you've already failed the test twice?
No. I went, at this point, I went to 3 different DMVs. I was like, no, I'm not taking any chances.
Yeah.
Was in total chill, relax mode the entire time, and was like, "All right, go straight, make a left." Like, was not even paying attention. He's like, "All right, good job."
Wow.
And that's how I passed my test on the third time.
Do you think that's what helped? Is the guy just not caring that
for
much?
For sure.
Yeah.
So and I think it helped me too, because I was like, oh, okay. This is going to be easy. Thank you.
I do look like I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Thank you for your confidence.
The first two were probably micromanaging every little movement.
Maybe. Maybe that's every time I would do something, they would write something down, and then I probably got real nervous about it, I'm guessing. Yeah. But this is why I bring this up. The other day I was driving and I was merging into a lane. And, like, of course, did it with ease, just did a little look back. Here we go, get in my lane. And then I had this flashback to a moment of, like, being a beginner driver. And I'm like, merging is the scariest thing of all time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And I just did that like it was nothing. But there's people out here who really don't know how to, that is scary. Merging is scary. Mm-hmm.
It is.
If you, like, get in the moment and think about what you're doing, that, like, you're trusting that they're going to stay at their speed and you're going to hit the right amount of speed to get in there and you guys are going to seamlessly get in. Like, that's a lot of trust and faith that we put into each other on the road.
And then one thing happens and you lose faith in everybody else, too.
Yeah, and nobody can drive!
Well, this is what I tried to do a bit about this for a while, but when I am in the car with my wife, I have to drive because one time, she was driving, and I'm in the passenger seat, and we're going down the interstate, and my wife goes, "Hey, I need to merge. Can you see if there are any cars over there?" And I go,
not called for backup.
I go.
Not phoned a friend.
I go, "What do you do when I'm not here? This is not my responsibility as a passenger. Like, I'm passenger. You're the driver. You drive right now." Like, I go, "Why don't you just, hey, tell you what, let me throw my foot over the console. I'll work the gas. You work the brake."
Uh-huh.
Like, don't give me responsibilities as a driver. Because merging can be scary. You know, they say the science of it is, for the good of traffic, is that you are only supposed to merge when the lane ends. Like, if everybody waited till the lane you're in, like, let's say a lane's ending.
Uh-huh.
If you merge when you get to the very end, that's better for all of traffic.
Oh, so not like when you're getting onto the freeway, jump over right away. They're saying take it all the way straight.
They say get all the way down before you merge. Especially if it's a lot of cars and there's traffic.
Yeah.
And a lane they're getting rid of a lane, you should get all the way to the end first.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know why exactly, but I read, this is how into it, the traffic end. I've read studies about how to best handle this. And they say you should get to the very end. So I do that. And then when I see other people doing it, I go, "Y'all are morons. I'm the only one out here trying to fix this with my behavior."
Okay. Although I had one last thought about driving that I wanted to bring to the table here. And I forgot what it was. Dang. Oh, well. Anyways.
Do you find that people...
I mean, I agree with you on the merging part, because to me that makes sense, because I learned how to drive in Texas, and I was told when you get on the highway, that's when you speed up and you match the speed, and so you might need that full lane to catch speed. And then I moved to LA, and they have stoplights at the entrance.
Oh, yeah, for traffic.
So you lose your momentum.
Ridiculous.
And I would like to argue they cause traffic. They don't help traffic at all. And I was like, this is not what I was taught. I was taught to match speed, not to stop and slow down. And so I run them every time.
There you go.
Caught yet.
They don't have those here, right?
No, I don't. Not that I've seen. I've seen those before, but not in the Nashville area.
Oh, that's interesting. I just realized that right now, that they don't have those here in Nashville. Because,
they also say roundabouts are way better for traffic than a four-way stop.
I can't stand a roundabout.
They're tough. When they're like three or four lanes deep, it's so confusing.
I hate it.
You know, and nobody knows what to do. So it's just a mess. But I think if everybody did it correctly, which doesn't always happen, but I think in theory, that's the best way to handle it.
Well, there we go. Back to putting faith in each other.
That's right.
And letting each other down. I'd be the first to let everybody down. I'd be like, listen, I'm just going to go, everyone. Mm-hmm.
That's the lesson from this podcast. Don't put faith in others. It's on you and you alone.
Yep. Every man for himself.
You can't lean on anyone.
No, you cannot. Not in your car, especially.
Yep.
Aaron, you have so much to be grateful for. We already talked about a lot, I'm sure, in the beginning of this. Just shooting the shoot.
Shooting the shoot.
Just shooting, ticking.
Yeah.
But let's get into it. Like, what comes to your mind when you think, like, I am so grateful for this? What pops in your mind?
For the past week, it's been my in-laws.
Ooh.
I've been very grateful for them.
Let's talk
and about. There's the trope of, you know, your spouse's parents are a nightmare. I've been very lucky. They've been nothing but great.
Good.
And they came to Nashville. They lived at our house for a week. And that allowed my wife, Lucy, to come to New York and do the Tonight Show with me.
Oh.
They watched the baby. Our baby has a few little health problems that we're working through that make it a little difficult to get a babysitter.
Okay.
They went above and beyond learning all of the equipment and really like got to a place where they were comfortable watching the baby by themselves. So they you talked about what a crazy like last week it's been. It's only been because of them that I've been able to do that.
Yeah.
So very grateful for them.
Where did they come in from?
They live in Charlotte, and they kind of split their time between Charlotte and Charleston. But this is their first grandkid. They love it. My parents have 11.
Okay.
They're a little less
impressed.
Veterans. Yeah, a little less impressed. No, they've been great, too. But my wife's parents have a little more flexibility with time and stuff. So they've been awesome.
Does
I don't know how
have
we...
siblings?
She has one brother, and he's about to have a kid.
Oh, fun.
So they're going to have two grandkids soon, and they live in Atlanta, so it's close by. So they're going to be hopping back and forth.
Oh, that's great.
A bunch, yeah.
That's great.
And they also, like, clean the house and stuff.
It's blessing.
Unbelievable.
What a blessing.
I came back the other day. I was like, what? I've never seen the house look like this. And it was my mother-in-law just, like, got annoyed with it and fixed it. So I was like, this is, it's like a cheat code. For parenting at this stage, so
just invite your in-laws.
Just have them there. Now, if your in-laws are annoying and stuff, I get it. But
sure,
these are great.
So, okay, taking it back with your in-laws, how many years have you been married?
I got married 2021, May of 2021, so 4 years, almost 4 years.
And then, how long did you guys date before you got married?
Man, I think like 5 years before.
You guys were dating a long time.
Yeah, I think a long time before that.
Wow.
Maybe. Yeah, 5 years.
Wow. Okay, so you guys have been together for a minute. Uh-huh.
So it was time. It was time,
Aaron. Did her parents ever like put the pressure on like, hey, 5 years?
I was pretty lucky. They were never like that. And they actually, when I first met them, I went to Charlotte alone. I just started dating Lucy, and they came to a show that I did there, Charlotte. horrible show.
Oh,
I'm
no.
sure I was awful.
Oh, no.
It was just like
oh,
a
no.
bar show.
Yeah.
But they showed up and were very supportive, and I stayed at their house, and that was my first.
Oh, you did?
That was my first time meeting them.
Wow. So you met them without Lucy?
Yeah, I met them without Lucy, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So, and they were great from day one. And so they've seen, in terms of my comedy career,
yeah.
I mean, they were there. They probably saw me and they were like, God, this guy stinks.
Yeah.
They're like, well, man, I hope he's got a fallback plan yeah. or something. But that's, you know, I've been doing it since I've known him. They've been nothing but supportive. So
that's very cool.
Yeah. I lucked out big time.
Yeah. That's amazing to have supportive in-laws. Even, you know, from the beginning, like when you could admit, like, yeah, I was not great at this show. Like, I was still just getting started.
Oh, yeah.
And they were still like, great show.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, it was pretty great.
Was your wife nervous having you meet them without her being there? Like, was she like, okay.
I don't know. I don't know if I was emotionally present enough to ask her something like that
at the
time.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think we're still pretty early on, so I was trying, you know, you try to play it cool and act like everything's fine.
When did you know she was the one?
Because
you dated for a long time. When did you know you were like, this is my girl?
I don't know. I think I always thought of it like the other way around. Like, you think everybody's the one until they're not.
Mm.
And she just never wasn't. Does that make any sense?
So interesting. Yes, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Although I would say I would hear that maybe from a girl more than a guy to say you think they're all the one until they're not. That is actually.
Until they prove they aren't.
Pretty
yeah,
neat.
She just never. Mm-hmm. So I never didn't think she was.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. That's how I've always thought about it. So.
So you just, you waited a good 5 years. You're like, well,
yeah.
You're still not the one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Romantic.
So it's about time. Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember why I decided to propose when I did, but it just kind of felt like time.
Yeah.
You know, asked her dad and yeah, it was great.
You did the whole ask permission thing?
I did. And she was like, you don't have to. But I thought, I think I probably still should. And I think he probably appreciated that.
Yeah.
Not that I need, like, I mean, I don't know. I think it was just nice to, like, let's talk about this before I do it.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. I think it's a little sign of respect, even if it's not needed. Like, you could have done it, and you would have been fine. You guys would still be married and happy, and you guys would still be getting along with your in-laws. It would have been great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just shows a little bit of, like, huh.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And I think I'm just more old school about that stuff than she is.
Yeah.
And I think I'm right about it. I'm just kidding.
You're so silly. So Lucy's from Charlotte?
Born in Boston originally. Her parents are from New York. They moved to Charlotte when she was a kid.
I was going to say, she gives me New York vibes.
Yeah.
She don't give me Southern Charlotte vibes. She gives me full Northeast.
New York Jews.
She gives me full Northeast.
Well, we're thinking about this now because I was, you know, I'm a Christian family from Alabama. So we're thinking a lot about little things that are important to me. Like, I was always taught, yes, ma'am, no, sir. Hold doors open for women. My mom would stand in front of the door waiting for me to open it just to, like, ingrain that in me.
Yes.
And my wife's family, they're all very nice and polite, but not they don't do those things.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. So I think those things are important.
Yeah.
And I think they, even if they're a bit old-fashioned and kind of hokey and people make fun of it now, I think in the long term, those things make you stand out.
Oh, yeah.
So, look, I'm getting ahead of myself. Baby's not even talking yet. But, like, I'm thinking about that stuff down the road, like how we're going to, you know, I think what I say goes, and that's how our relationship works. But I'm just kidding. I think I have the ultimate say, but my great-grandfather used to say how his marriage worked was they agreed early on, wife made all the small decisions, and that he made all the big decisions. And he said, it's been 50 years, and I'm waiting on my first big decision. I think about that a lot.
Yeah, that's good. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
What else are you grateful for? What else is going on?
So I was thinking about this past weekend, and this is a little inside baseball, so we don't have to talk about it too much, but I'm very grateful for the Nashville comedy scene.
Mm-hmm.
I was just on the road, a bunch of different cities. I saw some people who were pretty unhappy with the kind of the community they were in and their relationship with the comedy club. It made me really appreciate what we have going on here in Nashville. Yeah. And I was very lucky to have started here. And then, you know, having people like you and Nate and Dusty and these guys that are around, that makes everything feel like we're in a good spot. I'm pretty happy. Yeah. I'm very happy, actually, with Nashville comedy. So I'm grateful to be here.
What's your favorite things about the Nashville comedy scene? Like, what sets it apart from, like, whatever city you were just in? Like, when you think about whatever they were unhappy with in their community, like, what are the things here that make you go?
I think people talk about comedy a lot like it's very cutthroat and competitive, which I think it is. But I think here it's very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it can be healthy to be competitive. Like, I have people I started doing open mics with. I remember thinking, I want to have a better set than them that night.
Yeah.
You know? And then I would get lazy and I would think, oh, so-and-so is probably writing right now. And it would make me... So that can be good.
Sure.
I think when I was doing The Tonight Show, I was very touched. Somebody sent me a picture that a bunch of comics went to Zany's and they watched it together. So that was like that kind of stuff. And I remember doing that for other comics. So it felt very... It does feel... very supportive.
We celebrate each other. We support each other.
Yeah. And I think a win for any of us is a win for everybody. So
that's cool.
That's it's cool to be a part of. The main kind of practical, boring answer is the comedy club has a relationship with the local comics and has invested in us in a way that other clubs don't. So everything kind of trickles down from that. And, it's just a great spot to be. I tell people all the time that are unhappy in their comedy scenes, like, Nashville's got a good thing going.
Yeah.
And we got open arms. So
come on down.
Come hang out.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. Hey, when you were getting started, because you've been doing this for 9 years, and I know Nate's from Nashville, but then he left and did New York, and he lived there for a while, did the LA thing for a minute. Did you, when you started comedy, was Nate somebody that you were like watching like oh, I want to do what he's doing?
I mean, yeah, he was the guy.
Yeah,
for sure. Because
I'm trying to think where Nate was 9 years ago.
He wasn't around a ton. I remember he would show up every now and then. If he had like a Tonight Show set, he would run it at all the open mics.
Uh-huh.
And I remember like, God, this is crazy. Like,
yeah,
that's going to be on the Tonight Show on Friday.
Yeah.
And he's running it at the open mics. Uh-huh. So I met him briefly then. He would be around. We had all heard of him. But I don't know if he was living here full time when I started.
Yeah.
I have to do the math on it. But he was like the guy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because I think about like how the Nashville comedy scene, it's grown and it's so different from like a New York or an LA, where it's like any night of the week, here comes Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock or whoever just stopping in.
Yeah.
And imagine being like an up and coming comic, just writing jokes, hoping to get stage time, hoping they call your name in, you know, the raffle or whatever. And then here comes Dave Chappelle, and like that's who you are like seeing and watching. And I'm wondering who that was for the Nashville scene.
But I'll say that we have comparable nights at Zany's sometimes.
Sure, now.
With those lineups. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now for sure. Yeah, Nate would pop in. There'd be guys like Rory Scovel would show up to stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd be guys around.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't remember a lot of them like were Nashville people.
Yeah.
Like we're here, so. That's made a big difference.
Because there's so many now.
Yeah.
I mean,
it'll be like any given night. It'll be you or John Crist or like Theo Vaughn or Steve Byrne.
Yeah.
Or Kathleen Madigan would do some of those too. So it's pretty crazy. It's like an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It is a good scene. And I would always say too, like the LA scene and community, I never connected with it in a way where I'm like, these are my people.
Yeah.
Because I had anxiety, not because of who anybody was, or it wasn't anything other than my anxiety that was holding me back from making actual connections.
Right.
And I wouldn't go hang out at the club because I had anxiety about meeting different people, making friendships, having a set. Like any time I had a Tuesday night at the Improv, I had diarrhea all day. Full on. Yeah. Like it was just, I was so nervous. And I'm headlining at this time.
Was it about the set or about just being around other comics?
Everything.
Okay.
I didn't know anyone.
Yeah.
I didn't. And for years, I'm like, I should know people. And then my anxiety and my nervous tick would be, I would forget names. I would forget, like, you could introduce yourself to me 12 times. Yeah. And it's going to go in one ear and out the other, not because I don't care, but because I'm nervous inside. Right. And I'm not hearing anything you're saying.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know the doorman's name. I don't know the bartender's name. I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody here. And then I'm getting in my head. And then when I get there, you know, people are like, oh, hey, Angela. Yeah. And then it, like, it feels good. And at the same time, I'm like, I should know their name, but I don't know their name. Right. Oh, my God, I need to hurry up and get out of here. I'm going to do my set. I'm going to leave. Uh-huh. And so I would never take time to connect with people and make relationships. And now I will say, like, I've grown in that area as a comedian, like, just this last year. And here I am on what, year 17? Wow, and great. I just this last year started being comfortable doing sets around town.
Wow.
And to and even to the point here in Nashville, I'm like slowly, like, trying to make relationships with comics. And like one of them is Amber Autry.
Yeah, she's great.
She, I feel so comfortable with her. Yeah. And one day I called her and was just like, you know, I'm doing a set tonight. Do you want to come with me? And she's like, well, I have a set tonight. I was like, okay, then I'll come to your show.
Yeah.
And then just hop in my car and come with me to mine. And then she was like, okay.
That's the best.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, I'm trying to like put an effort to be a part of community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Little bits at a time. Like, I'm not at Zany's every, you know, new material Monday or anything like that.
Right.
But I do at least, like, try to make an effort to be like, I'm a part of this community, you know?
That's awesome. That's interesting because that was the motivating force for me from day one. That was, like, the primary motivating force was, like, to be in that. I remember going to an open mic. And just these comics that were funny, and they'd be outside and smoking cigarettes and roasting each other. And I thought they were just the coolest guys ever.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just be,
yeah,
I wanted to be one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, so that was like what drove me the most. It's almost like the comedy was secondary, which is kind of dumb. Yeah.
No, I get it, though.
Think about it. But I was like, yeah, I just want to.
It's like joining a gang.
Yeah. I would show up these open mics, and they would all see each other, and they'd be hugging. And I'd be like, man, when am I going to be
the funniest, friendliest gang ever? Yeah, but it's like joining a gang.
Yeah. We can't get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
No motivation. But
did you ever see the documentary about the Comedy Store on HBO?
I'm dying up here.
Is that what it was?
That wasn't a documentary. But yes, the Mike Binder directed. Yes, the documentary. I saw it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember watching that and like feeling so, one, emotionally torn. I had two different feelings. One was like so cool that I'm a part of this industry. Like this is what I get to. And you see these guys, how much they're having fun and they're growing together. Yeah. They started here and now look at, that's Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Like, and now look at that, you know, like, all these different people and seeing where they started and how they were at the comedy club. They just come and hang out. And it was like that dreamy kind of thing that you're talking about, like seeing them smoke outside and you're like, oh, I'm gonna be a part of this.
Yeah.
Right.
It's romantic.
Yes, it's romantic. Exactly. Yeah. But so I remember watching it feeling like, oh, this is romantic. This is so cool. And at the same time, sad that I let my anxiety hold me back from having that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like 17 years, I could have been
like
besties with some of these people and we could have been like, yo, look at us. We're all here. And now I still am like, yo, look at you're doing it. But it's like, I don't know. I think about that when I saw that documentary. I was like, this is such a cool thing to be a part of. I wish I was like more vulnerable and just let myself really like be a part of it.
But the flip side of that is I'm sure there are people who go, that don't have a husband and a daughter and a family and a career. You know what I mean? So you have a lot of things that you did it in your own way.
Yeah. No, I remember I told Whitney this, Whitney Cummings, and I forget what she said to me. She was something like, well, good thing you weren't there. It was not healthy. Like, yeah. You're fine, yeah. You know? I was like, yeah, but I still wanted it.
Sure.
But anyway. Yeah,
everybody wants to be at the cool kids' table.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. That's good. We're grateful for community. What else? What else are you grateful for?
Well, I'm grateful. I realized this year is that I've matured as a sports fan.
And
I'm very grateful for that. I've always been a big sports fan. This was a big year for me. I'm a University of Notre Dame fan. I went to school there, follow the football team religiously. We were in the national championship this year, the biggest game of my life as a Notre Dame fan. They haven't won the championship since 1988.
Whoa.
3 years before I was born.
This
is the biggest deal in my life as a sports fan, and we lost, and it didn't affect me the way that I thought it would. And I thought, I'm pretty grateful for that. I still like Notre Dame football, but it doesn't control my life in the way that it used to. And maybe that's maturing and growing up and got a baby now and your priorities are different. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of nice that, like, that was a Monday night and I had a pretty good week that week.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It didn't take you out.
I was bummed about it, but I thought, like, whatever, man. I got to wake up tomorrow. And maybe a lot of that is just I don't have the option anymore to just kind of stew in my own my own nonsense. I got to wake up and feed the baby and empty the diaper pail and, you know, be a husband. So, yeah, I'm pretty grateful for that because it used to really consume me.
Yeah.
You know?
I love this grateful, first of all. What a sentence. I am grateful that I've matured as a sports fan. Like, pause for that for a minute.
Yeah.
That is hilarious. And also, this is where I bring back to, like, how you see things and how this sets you apart as a comic. Like, saying a word like walk around Walgreens indefinitely and saying something like I've matured as a sports fan. I don't know. I just, it's speaks to, like, your point of view on life, and I really enjoy it.
Oh, thank you.
And I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I hear some people go, like, I've moved on from that or something. And I definitely still care about it, but it's like, it's just the perspective's totally different now, which I think is good.
Well,
I think it's where it needs to be.
You've matured as a sports fan. Meanwhile, Danielle here has done opposite, and she's just now becoming a crazy fanatic of, I don't know, somebody from Dallas got traded somewhere.
Oh, Luca.
She's having a hard time in life right now.
Are you a Lakers fan, Danielle?
No, I am a diehard Mavericks fan.
Oh,
and so I'm
sorry.
From Dallas, and unfortunately, I was born in Dallas, raised in Dallas, and will die with my Dallas teams because they all suck. But Luka was like, he was the face of the city. Okay.
Yeah, he was
our next Dirk, and
would have been the face for another 15 years probably.
Listen,
you know, because he's 20, what is he, 25, 26? He's young.
Yeah, he's young.
He's young.
We were investing in him.
Yeah.
And this will come out several weeks after this has died down. Although I don't know it'll ever die down with me personally, but that's where I'm like, as soon as you said matured as a sports fan, my brain literally was like, remember when you cried about Luca? Like, that is where my
like
brain
actual
is.
Literal tears.
I like now had look. Literal tears. It like we got the news at midnight. We were in Chicago, wherever we were. I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. What's going on? And I don't know that I'll ever get over it, I'll be honest. Like,
do you know
I'm
about
still
this trade at all? Did you
I don't
it?
Know the logistics of it. All I know is from what Danielle has
we traded
vented.
For an old man with a unibrow is what we traded him
he
for.
He's 31, but he is injury he's injury prone. So that's
he
the big thing.
He is injury prone.
But can why you did we do that?
Well, that's the big question. It's one of maybe the top three best players in basketball, middle of the season, out of nowhere, got traded to the Lakers for an older player who's injury prone.
Mm-hmm. From the Lakers, like they did a little swappy swap. Is that how that
there's
works?
A few other pieces in the trade too, other players, but that's kind of the main.
But that was the biggest.
Luka
and, like,
for Anthony Davis.
Yeah. And like the Lakers didn't want, like the Laker players, like it was Anthony Davis and they love him. They wanted to keep him.
Yeah.
And our GM, Nico Harrison, better watch your back,
Oh, you are a real fan.
He did this without discussing with anybody. He didn't discuss with Jason Kidd. He didn't discuss with Cuban. He didn't discuss it with anything. Like, and here's what ticks me off the most. Okay, circle back to Mattitudes.
Yeah.
Because what makes me mad, I just haven't been able to talk about this. Yeah. What makes me mad
is why you need to be able to vent to people.
Yes. A lot of, I know. And like, none of my friends care. And I'm like, please. And what makes me mad is like the GM, like typically when you have a player that is beloved, the nice, courteous, respectful thing to do as a GM and what how GMs have done in the past is like they've gone and spoken to their person in person, face to face.
Oh,
like,
they didn't even tell him ahead of time?
No.
He woke up to the news with everybody else?
The report is that he cried when he found out.
Aww.
He had just bought a big home in the Dallas area like days before this happened.
What in
the
world?
And all Nico did was like called him. And then, like, shot him a text that said something like, call me back. But it also, it happened, like, at midnight. Like, Luke was fully asleep and was woken up with the news.
It's pretty crazy.
And I was like, that is so disrespectful. That is so rude.
I know.
I need to know, like, was somebody, like, trying to save some cash? Like, what? They're like, he's too expensive? I'm
Well, I think he was up for, he was about to have to sign, like, a $345 million contract. Mm-hmm. And they think.
Like, the Supermax or whatever.
They just decided, like, long term that he was not the guy who would help him win, I guess.
Wow.
But he's so beloved by Matt. I mean, you can see how beloved he is that this was like the biggest story in sports for a while. It's crazy. Yeah,
because our most beloved player is Dirk Nowitzki, and he was with us his entire career. There's literally a statue in front of the American Airlines Center of Dirk, and it literally says something like, loyalty never dies. Like, it was, it literally has the word loyalty in it because he stayed with us. And sure, we only won the one championship in 2011. Whatever, let's look past it. But, like, that was supposed to be Luka. Like, and they were friends. And, like, he was supposed to be our next Dirk. And I just, like, I don't know.
He's
going to
be your next
like
great white player.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's
from Sylvania, I think is where he's from. But I just, I'm like, I felt like Nico came from a perspective of like, oh, but I want to win now. And I'm like, why? Are you going to sell? Like, are you going to sell your shares in a few years? Like, I don't know what your deal is. And like, you can even tell in the video, there's a press conference video of him and Jason Kidd. And he like admits, he goes, yeah, I didn't even tell Jason Kidd. And he's the coach. And,
and
Jason Kidd's
coach.
Just sitting there like catatonic. He's like,
wow. Mm-hmm. Get sad. Mm-hmm. Well,
anyway, so I have not matured as a sports fan yet. And I also did fantasy football for the first time this year and came in second and was devastated about that as well.
I think this is maybe you losing your innocence as a sports fan, too. Like, you need to have a few moments like this where you go, you know, you deal with it and then you realize your life's not that much different. It's a bummer. I think you got three or four more of these before you're at my level.
Before you have to start going to therapy. To change your ways.
Thankfully, I was born into Dallas Cowboy disappointment. Like, just
that's baked in you. You'll never get rid of that.
Oh man, Aaron, do you have any other gratitudes you want to bring to the airwaves? You want to send out into the world any gratitude goodness?
I've got one more great one for
you.
And I've been thinking about it a lot because it's one of those things you don't appreciate it until you don't have it, is air conditioning. Think about air conditioning all the time and what a blessing it is.
Do you run hot? Like, are you always like?
I'm so hot.
I'm
hot all the time.
Uh-huh.
I keep a house 67.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, I got to bundle the baby up pretty good.
But poor baby.
No, not the baby. She's never stretched her hand. Her hands have never touched air.
No, I got her swaddled.
She's swaddled.
In a quilt. I keep the house cold, man, and I love every second of it. And then, you know, you take it for granted until it's gone. And we it broke recently.
Oh.
And you know, look, you're probably thinking it's wintertime. And I understand that. It is wintertime. Mm-hmm. I still need the AC going. And so I got that fixed, and I'll never take it for granted again. I appreciate that.
You and my husband are on the same level with that. He
loves
likes
it.
Everything freezing.
Yeah.
I like to sleep freezing. I want it to be
okay.
Ice box cold.
Fan going too in the
room? Oh, yeah.
Love
fan going. icebox cold, but for me, I'm under all the cozy blankets, Manny's one sheet, and call it a day. And I don't understand how that's even possible. But so
people
he's
always
like,
complain about like being cold on planes. I'm like, I love it.
Oh no, I can't do that.
I love it. I like to. I twist. I, you know, and if I'm alone, I'll get all three of them pointed at me, and I just sit there and I love it.
I like to sleep cold. I don't want to be cold during the day. Okay. I can't function if I'm cold. And so it'll be like middle. So this is what we do. We keep it at like 68 during the day. And then at night, I'm bringing it to a cool 65.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, it'll be 68. But my husband's like, it's hot in here. And like trying to like bring it down. I was like, we're not asleep right now. I'm trying to. I still have to like move and function. And my brain has to work. Like I need to be a little bit warm.
Yeah.
So usually our happy medium is I just have to wear 10 robes throughout the house. Okay. Like
that's the compromise.
That's the compromise. When he leaves, then I get to turn the heat back up. Like if he's going to the gym or going somewhere, uh-huh. then I'm like, we're going back up, baby.
Uh-huh.
And then when he comes home, he's like, it's so hot. And then one day he tried to pull this one. He's leaving. He's not even going to be at the house. And he's like, it's hot in here. And he turns it down. I'm like, sir, you're on your way out the door. Don't you dare.
That's crazy. He just wants it to be good when he gets back.
And that's what he's saying. He's like, well, when I get back, I want it to be nice and cool.
I
said,
respect
sir.
The move. I respect the move.
Oh.
You got to get it ready to go. There's no better feeling. You step in the front door. You step into the cold. I love that.
He wants us to freeze out. He wants to freeze us out
can
just so that.
Can you do it from an app, can, too?
Yeah.
Can, okay. Yeah, then he can do it from wherever.
Oh, yeah. Just so he can be nice and cozy when he gets back.
That's the best.
And he had this studio, which you guys aren't even here in L.A. This studio was set to 65 when I came in.
Really? Oh, I don't know if that was an accident then because. Oh, no. I think he does that for the equipment.
The equipment. Yeah. I immediately turned it to 70. I said, no.
Yeah, I'm freezing. Yeah.
Well, I'll change it back when I leave.
Wild.
70's crazy. What are you doing? 70?
That's what I've
heard. She's wild. This girl is
I'm
wild.
I'm cold all the time too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I have a robe on. I have a blanket on. I'm like every Zoom call. I'm like my robe and everything. I'm like, hey guys. Sorry, did your AC break? No, I'm not allowed to put the heater on. Sorry.
I became a robe guy recently. I was in a nice hotel, and they had a robe, and I've never worn a robe, and I put it on. Felt pretty good.
Yeah.
But I realize if you're in a good mood and you put a robe on, it enhances it. Right? Uh-huh. But if you're in a sad mood and you put a robe on, everything's a little sadder. It kind of just enhances.
I can see it. Like, I literally see
now
it.
Now I'm just
what
like
that
dude in a robe. Like, yeah. It's weird. But if you're in a good mood, I think throw it on. It'll enhance everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? I'll tell you one of the guilty pleasures of being on the road. I was in Las Vegas. I was opening for Henry Cho, and I got there early, and the only room they had was the smoking room.
Oh,
and,
no.
And I go, I don't want to just sit in the lobby of this casino.
Yeah.
So
no.
They gave me like a $25 room service credit.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And I'm ashamed to admit this, but I sat in a robe. I sat in the middle of the room. I ordered a piece of carrot cake from room service, and I sat back and I smoked a cigarette and ate carrot cake alone. And I thought this would be like such an epic feeling. It was pretty sad.
Yeah.
Carrot cake was not that good. I took one puff of that cigarette. I thought, this is disgusting. I put that out. Yeah. So the robe will trick you. It won't always make things better.
No. Apparently not.
Mm-hmm. Learn that the hard way.
What a sad image.
I know. I've had a lot of those. I think it was my birthday, too.
And carrot cake. No, it was your birthday?
I think so.
That is sad.
Yeah, I think it was. I've had some sad birthdays on the road.
Oh,
comedy,
man.
You know? You notice, do you work, Valentine's Day is kind of gone when you do comedy?
Yeah.
With your spouse? Because I work, like, it's a big night for comedy.
Yeah, we're not big Valentine's Dayers anyway, so we're okay with that. But it is an excuse to, like, hey, date night, ticket, you know, get tickets sold
exactly.
And stuff like that.
So I haven't had a Valentine's Day with my wife.
Oh, wow.
For maybe ever.
9 years.
Yeah, maybe 9 years. Yeah, I guess it is nine.
Yeah.
Jeez.
How about, mine is New Year's Eve. I haven't had a very... This is a lie. I've had, in the past 17 years, probably three New Year's Eves where I wasn't working. I don't want to say I've never worked.
Yeah.
But New Year's Eve has been the holiday that I'm like, every New Year's Eve, I'm going to be working. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ring in the new year with a bunch of people I don't know.
Do you like doing that? Or it's tough in its own way.
I don't anymore. I used to. Uh-huh. Now I just want to be home with my family.
Yeah.
So this year I'm not doing New Year's Eve. I'm going to stay home and just be. And Rosie's young. She's not like she's staying up till midnight anyways. Yeah. And honestly, me and Manny probably won't either. We're probably just going to like go to bed early. But at least I get to start my new year in my home. And like, I don't know, do something fun with my family and celebrate like, hey, it's a new season. What do we want to do? What, you know?
Yeah, I did New Year's this year. I did the countdown on stage. I FaceTime my daughter actually at New Year's, which is pretty nice. Aww. But doing the countdown's brutal. I've had years where they go just like I had to fake the countdown.
No.
Because they couldn't coordinate it with the actual time. So it would be like 11:53 and 10.
Stop. No.
And I had to fake it. You know, if they got their phones locked up or whatever, they have no idea. Some of them have watches, I'm sure, but.
Yeah. Is just my watch lie to them.
Yeah, like, oh man, this watch is fast. But I've done that before. I did New Year's in Greensboro, North Carolina, open for a guy, Jay Bliss. I bombed so bad. I'm the only one not dressed up because I wasn't even thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm dressed like an idiot. And then there's no green room at the club, and it's completely sold out. There's not a chair in the building to sit. So I sat on the ground outside.
Oh.
At New Year's.
Aww.
So it's cold. And I sat outside.
Aww.
And then I had to come back up and go, duh. You know, like, I have a video of this somewhere of me, like, and they play that song that makes everybody emotional.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm just
yeah.
like, God.
What is it?
Auld Lang Syne or something. Yeah, it gets me emotional.
Me too.
Singing, yeah, something about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Although this year we had a remix version.
Oh, yeah.
They played some weird.
They played some sexy jazz flute version, and we're all.
Yeah. It was so bizarre.
Okay.
Sexy,
sure.
Like Kenny G or something?
Yeah, it was something.
Yeah.
That kind of version.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like that. Send me that.
Stand Up Live in Phoenix. I'm sure they have a copy.
I have a question as you were talking about. I opened for Henry Cho, opened for this guy. When did you start opening and going on the road? Like,
I was very lucky early on.
Yeah.
People in Nashville saw me and took Dusty Slay was the first guy who hit me up and was like, he was doing these funny business gigs, his little one nighters all around. He took me all around the country, up through the UP of Michigan and, you know, parts I'd never been. And they were not great shows, you know. And, and Dusty was not selling tickets at this time, so they were just brutal.
Yeah.
But that was, like, that got me on the road doing comedy. And then Henry Cho saw me early on. He just started taking me places. I remember I did a theater with him. I couldn't believe it was a theater.
Wow.
And it was a smaller theater, but I remember thinking, like, God, there's no tables in front of the chairs. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then John Chris saw me open for John Witherspoon at Zany's randomly and was like, come do a show with me. I had no idea who he was.
Oh, wow.
And then I showed up and the show was like 6,500 seats. And I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And then he took me on the road for a while. So I was just a lot of right place, right time.
Yeah.
I got that. That's just being in Nashville. Those guys were around and saw me. And
is John Chris who you spent most of your time opening, or
about almost 2 years with him?
Oh wow, that's a good amount of time.
Pretty good amount of time, yeah. And I was, you know, I was supplementing that with my own stuff in between. But the bulk of it, that's what I quit my job because I got I got enough stuff from.
What was your job before?
I worked at a marketing company. Digital marketing company. I ran Facebook pages for plumbers.
Were you coming up with slogans and stuff?
I was doing it all. I came up with characters and
Not
trying to brag, but three of the top four plumbing companies in Louisville, Kentucky, I ran their Facebook.
Let me tell you.
Let me tell you about KLM Heating and Cooling. or Project Heating and Cooling if you're in the Shepherdsville area. I know about all that. That was what I was doing all day. I was writing tweets for... You know, plumbing companies mostly.
Wow.
I guess they just pigeonholed me early on. I did most of the plumbing stuff, HVAC. But people I work with, they were doing hospitals and schools and stuff. I had all the blue collar stuff. So that's what I was doing.
So you quit your job because you ended up being on the road with John Crist mm-hmm. enough to where you're like, I actually don't need to do this. When you actually finally did quit your job, though, was there some nervous hesitation? Was there any like, okay, but what if it ends? Do I got to go back tomorrow? Or were you like, nah, I'm ready. Bye.
I was in a unique situation. There were some problems with my company that by the time I had quit, they hadn't paid me in almost 6 months.
Whoa.
So
you were an intern.
Essentially. I mean, and I still keep in touch with a lot of those people at that company. It kind of collapsed in on itself by the end.
But
it was kind of a blessing because you're always waiting to think, like, when will I be ready to live off of comedy? I just kind of looked up and I was like, oh, I've been doing that.
Yeah.
So there's no point of me doing this job. So I just quit it. And then COVID hit a few months later. Wow. But for those first few months, it was exciting and fun.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a brave step
doing
that.
I appreciate
quitting your day job, moving into I'm doing comedy full time. And it's a big step. I have another friend who he opens for me a lot, and he just recently quit his job. He went part-time for a while, and mm-hmm. he's older. He's got grandkids, you know what I mean?
Wow.
So he's got a lot of risk.
Yeah.
You know, he's got kids, he's got grandkids, he got his wife. Like,
is Ron?
Yes.
Oh, that's I love Ron.
Yeah.
I love Ron so much.
Ron's the best.
I've been working with Ron
I'm close with so many of the comics that you've been so great to, and they all speak highly of you, obviously.
Aww,
but
that's special.
I mean, Bates and Nate and Ron and all those guys, TC and everybody.
Yeah.
So,
oh, TC, yes.
Yeah, I've known Ron forever. I did gigs with him and Henry Cho, and that's how we met.
Yeah.
Early on, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
He's moving into a new season himself, and I'm so proud of him. And just you know, he's doing a lot of cruise ships now, and just. I'm proud to see my dudes like taking risks and believing in themselves and going for it. Cause like Ron is hilarious.
Yeah.
He's so talented and he has what it takes. And so I'm proud of him. So I don't know. I was just thinking about like when you mentioned Henry Cho, cause I know he works with Henry too as well. Just like, man, what was it like making that decision of like, I'm going to go full time now? I had a different story.
Yeah.
So I don't have that moment of like, I got to quit my day job to go full time. Cause I've been opening for, I opened 3 times.
Wow.
And YouTube just propelled me to where I am. So it was a whole different situation. So that's what I was curious about. Like,
yeah, I was barely, I think I was barely headlining when I quit. I was just like a full-time opener for people.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's
when did you move to headlining from full-time opening?
The first time I headlined.
Are you still opening for people?
A couple. I'm with Kathleen Madigan this weekend. I've got a few weekends here and there where I'll do stuff. I did a couple weekends with Nate last year. But for the most part, it's all just me at
nice.
Clubs now, which is a good feeling.
Yeah.
To see the calendar and it's all
hey,
you.
Let's go.
So that's fun. But it's nice to have a couple weekends where you don't have the pressure of selling tickets and stuff.
For sure.
And
oh, my gosh.
Just swoop in and you have the easiest spot in the world. And
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. To go on a weekend and do 25 minutes.
And then you're done.
And be done. You don't have no pressure of selling no tickets. Uh-huh. And then they're out there doing an hour while you're eating some snacks in the green room.
So great.
Oh, my God.
So great. Yeah. So it's still nice to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like the last 2 or 3 years, I've started just doing more of my own stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
Good for you,
it's
man.
Really exciting.
Well, listen, do you have a voice message for us to listen to?
Yeah.
Okay,
I
so
do.
People call in and tell us what they're grateful for.
I
so
love it.
Danielle's going to
let
them know.
And do we make fun of it? Or
whatever you want. Okay. We want to make fun. A lot of times it's pretty heartfelt, and we go there with them.
Okay.
We're their support team
at
this point.
I love
Everybody needs a support team, we've discovered. But if you are watching or listening and you want to call and tell us what you're grateful for, here's a phone number.
747-300-5380. Give us a call.
I thought this was the voicemail.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
Okay, here's the voicemail.
Who is that singing?
Gabe Gibbs.
Who's that?
Gibbs. He really came from Broadway, and now he's doing stand up, and he'll do like funny songs. He actually was at the Lab last year or sometime. I went to his show at the Lab.
Okay. September.
Yeah. Very funny.
Yeah. Okay. Here you go.
Hey, Angela Johnson Reyes. This is Mary Kelly in Atlanta. I just wanted to tell you that I am so grateful for all the chaos in my life.
Ooh.
All the happy chaos that my kids create. It's such a privilege to be busy and a privilege to be raising wild kiddos and hopefully kiddos that love the Lord. And I'm just grateful that even though we've got trials in our lives, the chaos that we do have is happy. And so I'm just really grateful for that. And for you, for all the years that I have been a fan of you. I love your comedy, and thank you for sharing your life with us and these interviews. It also just brings a lot of happiness to my day. Love you, girl.
Aww.
All
right,
so we make fun of that one?
That's
it's like the sweetest message of all time. That's so great.
That is special.
What a good spin on it. I remember my grandfather telling me that he grew up without a dishwasher in his house, and they had to hand wash all the dishes. And he said, thank God we never had a dishwasher. He said some of the best memories were with him and his mom and his siblings, and they'd sit there and talk and do the dishes.
Oh, my God.
I remember thinking that was such an interesting way to think about it.
Like, yeah.
Thank God I didn't have a dishwasher because of it.
Wow.
So that's exactly what that woman did right there. Is you reframe all of that and think this is all a blessing in its own way.
Totally.
You know?
That is when she said, like, being thankful from being busy, that is such a good reminder for me, especially because when I get busy, I'm overwhelmed and I'm like, oh, I wish I could just turn all of this off and like, let me cancel meetings. Let me cancel everything. And again, I get anxious and whatnot. I'm like, I need to cancel things. It's too busy. It's too much, too much. But to pause and reframe and be like, oh man, I'm grateful that I have this many meetings on my book.
Yeah.
This many people want to talk to me.
Yeah.
And see how can we work together? What can we do?
Because you remember a time where that wasn't the case, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just getting that reminder, that reframe of like, well, too much. No, like, oh, wow, thank you. Yeah. Thank you that I have all of this. Amen. Right. Thanks, girl, for calling in. What was her name, Danielle?
Mary Kelly?
I think it was Mary Kelly.
Yeah.
Good memory.
Thank you, Mary. And you live in Atlanta. You know all about traffic, too.
Yeah.
So it's okay to be mad about that. Hit me up if you want to complain about it.
Erin, thank you so much for coming in and spending some time with us and sharing your gratitude with us. Very cool. And to learn more about you and just your life and things that you've experienced. It's very cool.
Thank you. Yeah,
I appreciate you.
I loved it. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're the best.
Thank you.